From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
When most of us think of growing herbs each spring, what we probably put into our shopping cart, whether from online seed catalogs or at the garden center, are the culinary must-haves, the basil, the parsley, the dill, and such. At the Met Cloisters in Upper Manhattan, a branch of the Metropolitan Museum of Art focused on the medieval era, the herb collection is far vaster, with possibilities for culinary use, sure, but also for purposes like dyeing and other crafts, or for household uses, or for medicine, for magic and ceremony, and even herbs for promoting love. Each one has a story to tell, and some of those stories, along with various plants you'll want to try, are our topic today. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Walcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Today's guest is Carly Still, the managing horticulturist of the Met Cloisters in New York City, where she oversees the three main gardens that hold the museum's living collection. One of those three is the Bonifant Cloister Herb Garden, and she's here to introduce us to some of her favorites we may want to grow to and tell us their stories. And I'm so glad to welcome her today. Hi, Carly. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. Thank you so much. I'm doing very well. How are
yes.
you?
Yes. Good. You're surviving this crazy weather season and all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to stay steady like all gardeners.
Yes. Yes. Well, we recently did a New York Times garden column that was fun together. And that's why I wanted you to come in and also share some of your knowledge and some of the wonderful herb stories with the listeners of the A Way to Garden podcast. If people are near New York City, the Cloisters is a must destination. And I think both for the gardens and what's inside the museum are pretty special. I mean, it's like a whole nother world. It must be a wonderful place to work.
It absolutely is. I feel very fortunate to be able to be managing the gardens here. And I think that's one of the common themes that I hear visitors say is they feel like they're transported or they're, you know, back in Europe or, you know, so it really does have this magical ability to inspire and to allow people to slow down. And I think that that's really a big part of my work in the gardens is to kind of reintroduce people to some of these herbs that I feel like do live within us.
With their incredible histories. And so herbs, you know, again, not just parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, right? So what's an herb, do you think? And what have you come to regard as the definition of herb after, I think you've been there 13 years approximately, working at the Cloisters with its historical perspective. What's an herb?
Well, like I said, I think that they're really all encompassing. I believe that, you know, an herb is really a plant that has a purpose and a use. And so at the Cloisters, I think what we're really striving to get across is just how connected people are to plants and how plants were being used, herbs were being used for all aspects of life. And so it's much more than just making a really nice salad or seasoning, right? Which is also really
tea, herbal tea.
Yeah, wonderful and important. And I love that people, you know, have that connection to their leafy greens. But it's the root of it all, I think, is much deeper than that in the way that plants were really just such a essential part of life. So to me, I think an herb really, or plants, all plants do have a purpose, and I think we have to broaden our perspective a little bit. And although we might not want to be welcoming all of these herbs into our own home gardens, I do think that there is a responsibility to understanding how they have been used and were really regarded and were seen as allies for people. So I hope that, you know, it's a way to expand our thoughts about plants a bit.
Yeah. So within the herb garden then at the cloisters, you have plants grouped, you know, kind of have beds with plants grouped according to their purpose. Mm-hmm. So yes, there's the vegetable and salads, I think, your sort of edibles bed.
And,
yeah. There's different beds. And I think you have a medicinal bed, but it's like almost like every herb was medicinal. When you read the histories of these herbs in some of the old books, it's like everything had a medicinal use of one kind or another, right? It seems like, yeah, it's pretty amazing. But you have other kinds of beds too, like household and magic and something or other. I mean, it's just all these wonderful beds. So tell us just a little bit about some of them.
Yeah. So I think that that's just a really was a brilliant way when this garden was designed for us to be able to really kind of showcase these groupings of plants. But you really nailed it that, you know, every plant, most plants really did have a medicinal purpose. So we always sort of have our disclaimer that's like, well, if this, you know, plant is growing, say, in the magic and ceremony bed, it may also, you know, it could be grown in the medicinal bed as well, or this is a plant that's in the household bed, but it was also used for, you know, this other purpose. But yeah, we've got our medicinal, we have our brewing herbs. So thinking about what people are drinking, really throughout the day, they're, you know, ales and was much safer for people to be consuming than just water. So thinking about
And they used all kinds of different herbs before hops was the main thing, right, of brewing. Different herbs were used. Like, what are some of the ones that were used that are in that
group? So we kind of highlighted, we had talked about cosmary in the times, but the other common name for cosmary is actually alacost. So it's A-L-E-C-O-S-T is the spelling on that. So that sort of common name gives us a clue, alcost, that was another flavoring agent. So, and then we, you know, there's mugwort, which is everybody's, you know.
The nemesis. Yeah. But but now that you said, you said cosmary, and you said it had another name that was,
alcost.
Alcost and ale, so to speak, cost, and then and you're saying mugwort, so
mugwort. And then there's one of my favorite plants that we also grow in the medicinal bed was clary sage. That was another flavoring agent, but wonderful. You know, has a fabulous fragrance to it. I think it's just a beautiful flower. And I remember that one as Clary Clear Eye, because the seeds of that would have been soaked in it. It was, you know, kind of like your medieval eye wash. But just really, you know, just one of my thinking about, I know I'm jumping from the brewing, but
but that's about, the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. They all kind of continue to tell, you can kind of work your way into thinking about fragrance when you start to think about clary, and the same for cosmary, and both of these being like very, very aromatic herbs. And this, I do believe that there is a medicinal component to being able to smell something and really instantaneously having, you know, this really pleasant reaction to it, or this uplifting reaction to it. It really is, you know, you experience that.
Yeah. And well, you told me when we did the time story, you told me that I think cosmary, one of its common names was Bible leaf.
Yeah.
And that leaves were like dried in books, including the Bible. And so
Exactly. And it's this wonderful, right? Again, thinking about these like kind of allies, right? It's this wonderful herb that has this fantastic ability to uplift the person. And yeah, it would just be pressed within books. And I think people love it's just such, I think that that common name, Bible leaf, is just really kind of sticks with you and your. For your memory to kind of think about how plants were being used. And so
Right.
that's a really fun story.
If you were nodding off during your studies, you could get a whiff. And I think it's spearminty a little bit. Yeah, a little bit aromatic, like
Exactly.
spearmint. Yeah. And clary sage, I mean, Salvia sclaria. I just think I used to have that in my sort of crack and crevice patio, gardeny kind of area many years ago. And I now that you're mentioning it, I'm like I'm wanting it again. And it's one of those self-sowers, you know, that moves around, but. It's just a lovely plant, architectural, but also has sort of, I think, a rosette down by the base. Doesn't it have like, yeah, and just a wonderful sage, an unusual sage compared to the culinary sage, right? It's unusual.
And it's just a little bit of a sweeter fragrance too. It's not as kind of pungent. But yeah, just a really, really elegant flower, I think. And just yeah, kind of a lot of these are just really kind of feel easygoing to me. You know, they're not I don't know. You don't have to be kind of overly tending them. I think they want to set their seed, and clary is one of those that just sort of, you know, it's just reliably set seed kind of in the area where we want it to grow. It doesn't take over the garden. It's another plant that was in the also a plant that's in the unicorn tapestries. So that's a flower that we're also growing over in the tree cloister garden, which is inspired by those tapestries. So I guess through that you can also see how we're interpreting, you know, plants in the permanent collection as well within this garden. So
Right, so the unicorn tapestries, I guess what there are seven of them or something, what they're maybe from, I don't know, is it right around the beginning of the 1600s? I can't, or is it the 16th century? I can't
Yeah,
remember.
16th century, I
16th
believe.
century. So, and in the permanent collection within the museum, that's one of probably the most visited, you know, the best known parts of the collection is the unicorn tapestry. So you've then interpreted, you and previous gardeners there obviously have examined them and interpreted and in the living collection outdoors some of the plants that went into them or that are depicted in them, or I think even the plants that were used to dye the threads that made the tapestries, you even grow those, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, so it's they're really a wonderful prize piece in the collection, but I think from the gardener's perspective, one of the ones that's just fascinating to go in and be able to identify you know, flowers that are depicted in there and just really admire the skill of the artists that you know, spent, you know, all those years, I imagine, producing these collections. So, but yeah, within the herb garden, we have our garden bed that's kind of devoted to artists' materials, and so that we have lots of dye plants and the three main dyes, the madder, woad, and weld that were used for these tapestries are grown in that bed, and then so of course. You know, those being red, yellow, and blue, although I don't know which order I said the common name in, but
Well, I think madder is red. Is madder red from the roots? Is that right?
yeah, madder was red from the
And
roots.
woad, which color do we get from woad? Even though the flowers are all yellow, what color do we get from
Yes,
woad?
such a beautiful plant. So the leaves of the woad will yield blue,
Blue, right.
and then
The weld
the
is the
weld
one.
is the yellow. Yeah,
Right.
the whole plant. Excluding the root, can yield the yellow. So, yeah, just a really wonderful way for us, I think, as a museum, right, as a collective museum, to be able to also just illustrate how interconnected our living collections, being the gardens and our permanent collection, there really is this sort of dialogue that's existing between the galleries and the gardens. which I think is really what sets our museum apart, and it really does make it feel very unique and very much alive.
Yeah. No, it's again, and I think that's part of the reason what you were saying at the beginning, how people come and they feel, there's this sense of like transformation, or they've come to a different world, because both indoors and outdoors, and the architecture of the building and the cloisters, the archways and the walkways outdoors and so forth, with in some cases actual historic pieces of architecture from elsewhere that have been transported and put back together and so forth. But I mean, it really it feels like, plus it's planted like, and all the artifacts and art inside are like, this medieval era. So it's a world unto itself, really.
And I think one of the things that I find so beautiful, particularly within the herb garden, is just this right, this common thread, right? These plants existed and they still exist to this day. And I think when people go into the herb garden, I really do call this the garden of stories. There's so much dialogue that comes up between, the visitors and the workers, the gardeners, because these plants, trigger memory. And I often hear people say, oh, quince, which are we grow this fruit tree in the herb garden, and it's not very common here in the Northeast, but lots of people from South America and Europe say, oh, I remember my grandmother or so and so had this in their garden, or a fig, I remember this from whoever's garden. And so it's just really a wonderful way for people to be able to also share their experience and parts of their life with us. And I think that that's essentially what what we're doing. We're telling the stories of these plants, but everybody also has their own experience, and it's just wonderful to be able to share that with one another.
Well, when we did the time story, you told me about again all the different beds with their purposes and so forth. And the one that, of course, besides the magic and ceremony one, the one that cracked me up was the love, the love bed. And you told me about a plant, Dittany of Crete. So tell us about Dittany and what it's related to and so forth. What's Dittany of Crete?
So Dittany is just one of the sweetest little herbs, and it's an oregano. It's native, endemic to Crete. So this really, can you imagine this really rocky, dry sort of cliffy areas? And so the story that I've always hung to, because I'm a romantic at heart, is that these sweet, woolly, it's got, well, let me go back to the description. It's got these really beautiful, small, delicate, woolly little leaves, and then just these really beautiful, pinkish kind of flowers. They're just very delicate. But anyways, they talk about how, this was a kind of a love charm. It was this very symbolic herb. So, a lover might, be out risking his life to collect this herb for the person that he has this, he or she has their eye on. So it was just a really
Right, to go on the
sweet token.
rocky cliffs and risk life and limb to get some of these tiny flowers off this precipitous, unstable, right,
Forget
ground.
diamonds. What we all need is some Dittany.
Dittany. Right. So it's what is it? Is it like Origanum dictamnus? Is that what it is? Did I make that up? Sometimes I make stuff up.
Nope, that sounds right to me.
So again, it's a, we all know oregano, but there's so much a range of related plants, and this is one of them, and it has this charming story. I think you grow it in pots.
Yep, we grow it in pots, and yeah, you can use it similarly in cooking. But it's just a really sweet little herb, and I think also, when you grow things in pots, people, notice them a little bit more, and you're
Yeah.
also able to kind of lovingly care for them a little bit more. So, yeah, but it doesn't want to be in our wet winter soil. So,
No.
and heavy
When we did
rainfalls.
the Times column, you mentioned a few edibles that I had never grown, a few edible herbs. And it's not that they're impossible or whatever. It's just I had never, and one is called skirret and one is salad burnet. And I just wondered if you could tell us about those because they were both adorable and kind of interesting, the parts that were edible and the flavors that they imparted, unexpected in each case. They don't look like what they taste like, either one.
Well, truthfully, that cute little salad burnet, the Sangiosorbo minor, was really, I know Sangiosorbo's, from lots of ornamental forms of that. But this little one was just really kind of has charmed me. It's just really kind of a small plant. I actually just planted some over in tree garden because I wanted to see how it would look just kind of as an ornamental plant on its own. But just has really kind of ornate little leaves, and the minute that you cut into it, it releases this really, it's cucumber. I almost feel like there's like almost a hint of watermelon. Just feels, it smells very fresh. So it's wonderful to add into a salad or, nice restaurants, I'm sure, just use it as a really beautiful little garnish on a plate. Just really, really elegant and kind of a no-nonsense herb. So that's been one of kind of my new favorites. And then skirret gets quite tall, but it has these really lovely, umbel flowers that I'm just discovering are really, really long lasting. So they serve as a great cut flower. But yeah, which has been a really nice surprise this year because it, c can kind of get a little bit, falls over a bit, but not
Don't we
real thing.
all in
But
this heat? Don't we all?
yeah, exactly. But if you cut it and throw it into a vase, it really lasts long. But the roots of that are what was the edible part. So it was sort of cooked almost like a carrot or a parsnip. But it has kind of these kind of like finger-like little unusual looking roots. But yeah, it's something that's a little bit more unusual.
Yeah. So you mentioned tree garden before, and that's one of the three cloisters at the cloisters, one of the three gardens. And we've been talking about the Bonnefont herb garden, and then there's the Cuxa. Is it, how do you say a Cuxa cloister? How do you say
Yeah,
the other one?
some
So
people
there's
say Kuxa, some people
Cuxa.
say
So
Kusha.
there's three primary gardens in the tree, just so people know what you
Oh
were
yeah,
mentioning
of
before.
course.
Yeah. We had maybe 3 minutes left, and I was just going to say a couple of beautiful little flowers that you that are just easy to grow, and yet I think not enough people grow them, and I don't think even people think of them as herbs again because of that definition that we have of culinary green stuff. Like calendula and borage, you really love, and you say they're your favorite medieval flowers. And so tell us about those two, because those are so charming.
Well, borage and calendula I find to just be so easy to grow from seed. So I love that. This ease to it. But this, calendula, this Calendula officinalis was, they were known as golds because of this, beautiful sort of orangey golden color that the flowers have. And they talk about this, color and this flower being really good for sort of kind of balance, right? If we're feeling a little bit out of sorts, by kind of gazing into this flower form, we can kind of get some ease, which I think we're all kind of looking for. So I love this kind of deep admiration for flowers and that's one of those, but it of course was used for all sorts of other purposes for, you know, natural dyes. I mean, we use calendula and all sorts of ointments and healing creams today.
I think, and you can eat the flowers, can't you? Can you?
Yeah. That's right. And it, one of its other common names was pot marigold. Right. So this was a plant that was also edible and being thrown into the pot, thinking about, you know, diet. And and similarly, borage is another edible flower. And
blue, just, beautiful blue, huh?
Beautiful blue. And we talked about that kind of quote, a garden without borage is like a heart without courage. So just this really refreshing, kind of encouraging characteristic that this flower kind of encompasses, just kind of rooting us on while we're while we're out in the garden bed. So that kind of brings me some cheer. But there's just so many great herbs, Margaret. I just want to keep telling you about more.
Well, and with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, what I'm going to do is, you have a link on your website, on the Cloisters website, to the plant list of the garden as well, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
And so I'm going to make sure to give that and information about visiting. And I think you have tours and things. Do you have tours at certain times?
Yeah, that's right.
So I can give all the links to how people who are in the area or coming to the area this summer or fall or whatever can come and visit, because it's really an unusual escape, a very distinctive place. I always love talking to you, Carly, still, and thank you so much for making time today. I know you have 8 million things to do on your list.
I'm happy to slow down a bit. Thank you so much for the invitation, and thank you for all that you do.
I'll talk to you again soon. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening, including with herbs, meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.